The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode is sponsored by the Town of Wainwright. And you can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. Today I'm talking about the history of Wainwright, Alberta, a really cool community located just near the Saskatchewan border with a deep and interesting history. So this episode won't be like a normal episode where I go through the chronological history of something. Instead, it's going to be split up into various segments. I'm going to have some archival audio and some interview clips with the mayor of Wainwright. So let's get right down to the interesting history of Wainwright, Alberta. Indigenous and early explorer history. For thousands of years, the Indigenous moved through the Wainwright area following the bison herds. The land was the traditional home of the Cree and Blackfoot, with the Métis coming to the area later, after Europeans had settled through much of the Canadian West. In the 1870s, a man named Walking Coyote would gather two bison bulls and two bison cows and move them to Montana. That herd would grow in size to 13 and was then sold to two ranches and became one of the last wild Great Plains bison herds in existence. This is important because the bison will have an important impact on Wainwright later in its history, which I will get to in this episode. The first European to come through the area was a man by the name of Anthony Henday. If you live in Edmonton, you know that name because the road that circles the city is named Anthony Henday Drive. He worked for the Hudson's Bay Company, and he reached the area in 1754. He became the first European to pass the boundary of what would one day be Alberta, and he would spend several days in the area with his Cree guides. 3 decades after Henday came through, Peter Pond would come to the area for the Northwest Company, followed by Alexander Mackenzie. By the mid-1800s, more people were coming through, including missionaries like Reverend George MacDougall and Father Lacombe. In 1858, the Palliser expedition arrived and would see that the area was excellent for agriculture and ranching, shattering the myth put forward by the Hudson's Bay Company that the land was barren, so that they could keep their fur trade monopoly going. From there, settlers would start to arrive, and the area would change forever. Town founding. The story of Wainwright after the Indigenous begins in 1905 when the settlers began to arrive in the newly formed province of Alberta. The original town site would be established by James Dawson 2 years later, but the original name would be Denwood. It's not known why that name was chosen, but it didn't matter because the name didn't stick. 1 year after the founding of that town site, the Grand Trunk Pacific Railway, which today is the CNR, would arrive in the area. They would establish a new town site 4 kilometers west of the current town site established by Dawson. The new site would be named Wainwright, in honor of William Wainwright, the second vice president of the railway company. William Wainwright had come to Canada in 1862 to serve as the chief clerk in the accountant's office of the railway. He would eventually rise up in the company, and after 52 years as an employee, he would pass away on May 14, 1914. The original plans for the town were to make it a major divisional point, with branch lines going out to North Battleford, Medicine Hat, Calgary, and Peace River. This would result in a huge influx of people moving into Wainwright. By the end of 1908, there were 450 people living in the community, and by 1910, the village reached 1,000 people and became a town. The divisional point plans didn't come to pass, but Wainwright remained a major railway center for the area of the province. The Stampede. While COVID-19 put a stop to it this year, The Wainwright Stampede is one of the biggest events in the area. Held in June, it runs for 4 days and is one of the top five largest rodeos in Canada, and it includes a stampede parade, a midway, agricultural fair, and more. Easily the biggest event of the year for the community, it features 4 days of Canadian Professional Chuckwagon Association races over the course of the rodeo. The Stampede started over 6 decades ago and has grown to become one of the most important tour stops for rodeo participants from all over the world. And while it may be postponed because of the pandemic, it will return in 2021. Here's Mayor Brian Bethune.
So it's one of the few rodeos around the Wainwright Stampede that still has professional rodeo and professional chuckwagon races on the same day for 4 straight days. There's a lot of professional rodeos and there's a lot of professional chuckwagon days, but hardly anybody anymore has them both. So we draw people from miles around and rodeo contestants from miles around. And it's probably the biggest event of the year in Wainwright that actually brings a lot of tourists and people from all over. On an annual basis, we have big events, but on an annual basis, the Wainwright Stampede would probably be number one.
Battle River Train Trestle. When you go to Wainwright, another important part of the railroad history is the Trestle Bridge. This bridge was built by the Grand Trunk Railway in 1908, and at one time was the longest in Canada, but today it is the second longest behind a viaduct near Lethbridge. The trestle runs for 2,775 feet and rises 195 feet above the ground. Located just 3.5 miles northwest of Wainwright, the trestle overlooks Battle River. When the trestle was built, it was the longest freestanding one in Canada, and a man was required to walk across it previous to the train every time there had to be a crossing. The first train would officially cross in January of 1909, and the total cost of the building of the trestle was $600,000, or $13 million today. The trestle offers a great lookout point as well for seeing the entire landscape and getting some pictures for Instagram. The Memorial Clock Tower. When you go into Wainwright's downtown, you will see a large clock tower made of rocks, beautifully crafted as a centerpiece for the community. The memorial clock dates back to 1925 to commemorate the men who died in the First World War from the area. Sitting at the intersection of Main Street and 2nd Avenue, it was the only structure left standing after the 1929 fire destroyed 70 businesses and 8 homes in the community. It was designed and built by Frank Bailey and is described as a Roman tower. In relation to its designation as a pillar of honor for the soldiers who served in the First World War, it should be noted that more men from Wainwright and the surrounding area enlisted during the First World War than in any other district of comparable size. Here's Mayor Brian Bethune.
Yeah, after the Buffalo, that's probably one of the main attractions of our Main Street because it sits about a half a block from the town hall right in the middle of Main Street. Like you literally could run into it if you had to. You have to go around it. And it's a beautiful stone structure to honor the those who lost their lives at the First and Second World Wars and wars since then. It's a memorial clock tower. We don't let anybody do anything with that clock tower without consulting the Legion and getting their permission. It's got a huge clock. It's very unique. They now have chimes installed in it where I believe every hour a song plays by chimes. And it's pretty cool if you're downtown and you listen to that. But that is definitely a huge part of Wainwright and something you want to see.
The Buffalo, capital of Canada. When you visit Wainwright, you'll notice that not only does it have the largest buffalo statue in Canada, but it's also billed as the Buffalo, capital of Canada. The statue itself was erected in 1965 on Main Street in memory of the buffalo herds that roamed the area. Before the settlers and homesteaders arrived, the bison would sweep over the landscape and were a vital food source for the indigenous people. Unfortunately, when Europeans began to arrive, the bison population started to crash. I did an episode on this several months ago, looking at the loss of the bison and its impact, and I encourage you to check it out. Amazingly, amid all that destruction, a small herd of bison were isolated from the destruction of their species. Protected by the mountain ranges in the Flat Herd Valley near where the Pablo Ranch was found near Cardston, this small herd would slowly grow to reach 600 head by 1907. The herd was then offered up for sale to the U.S. government by a landowner who had protected the species for the previous two decades. The offer was turned down, and the Canadian government would come in and purchase the bison and move them to Wainwright. In 1907, with the bison population nearly gone, the Canadian government would create Buffalo National Park on 160 square miles. This area would be fenced and stocked with 700 bison purchased from Montana and the aforementioned bison purchased from Cardston. The entire herd was transported to the park by train, along with a small population of elk and moose. Over the course of 15 years, that herd would continue to grow to the point where in the 1910s, there were sanctioned slaughters of the bison, which brought about a public outcry. Beginning in the early 1920s, bison were transported out to parks and countries around the world. This included sending 6,000 bison out to the new Wood Buffalo National Park in the 1920s. As for the Buffalo National Park, it would continue to operate until 1940, when the animals were removed from the area and the former park was turned over to the Department of National Defense. By the time the bison were shipped out, 39,000 had been produced in the park, literally saving the species. In addition, 3,000 elk and 300 moose had been produced at the park over the course of its three decades of existence. Thanks to the park full of bison, the Hollywood movie, The Last Frontier, was filmed in Wainwright in 1923. The movie was released on August 16, 1926 as a silent Western film, starring some of the biggest stars of the day, including Frank Golan, John Hoxie, Marguerite de la Motte, and William Boyd. Another film shot at the Buffalo National Park was the Calgary Stampede in 1925, which starred Hoot Gibson, one of the leading actors of the day. In 1980, on the 75th anniversary of the formation of Alberta, and to celebrate the legacy of the Buffalo National Park, four bison from Elk Island National Park were moved to Wainwright. The four bison that were moved to Wainwright would be housed at the Bud Cotton Paddock, named for the first park warden of the Buffalo National Park, and he was there to cut the ribbon at the paddock when it was opened. In honor of Walking Coyote, who likely saved the species from extinction, two bulls and two cows were chosen to be part of that memorial herd. Today, a dozen bison reside at the paddock on CFB Wainwright. Here's Mayor Brian Bethune.
This all started years ago, way back in 1907, I believe, where the government created a buffalo park on 160 square miles of land right adjacent to the town. And they stockpiled it with several hundred head of buffalo. We call them buffalo. I guess technically they're actually bison. But we're sticking with buffalo. And so they had 160 acres and they stocked it. And of course, the buffalo bred, like it got this, a huge population. So every year they had to cull the herd. And in 1922, they began to reduce the population. And many buffalo were shipped off to Wood Buffalo National Park. And then that all ended in 1939. The buffalo were removed and the land was turned over to the Department of National Defense, and it became a military base, training base, one of the largest in Canada as well. And so the buffalo kind of became not extinct. They still have Bud Cotton was the park ranger out there, and they have a Bud Cotton buffalo paddock just as you enter the military base. So back with that kind of history, we decided to, I think it was in 1965, we had a guy build a huge buffalo right where you come down Main Street of Wainwright. So as soon as you come into Wainwright, you see this huge buffalo, and it's quite an attraction. You always see people taking pictures there. And there are still buffalo out at the military base, so you can take your family out and look at them and see them wandering around there. So it was only like in the last 10 years, we actually decided to grab it by the horns and officially be registered as the Buffalo Capital of Canada. So it's a pretty cool story.
CFB Wainwright. With the bison now out of the park, Camp Wainwright could be established as a training establishment for the Canadian Army. While it started out as a training facility, Camp Wainwright would operate as a prisoner of war camp from January 29, 1945 to May 24, 1946. The camp interred 523 captured German officers, soldiers, and civilians on the day it opened, and would reach a peak of 1,100 POWs. Through the 16 months that the POW camp operated, only two prisoners would escape, only to be captured later. In 1980, several POWs returned to Wainwright and related their time in the POW camp.
During the Second World War, 35,000 Germans came to Canada as prisoners of war. Between May 1945 and July 1946, 1,700 of them, all officers, were kept at Camp Wainwright, 200 kilometers southeast of Edmonton. For them, the fighting ended early. Many spent years in prison camps like Wainwright. In 1946, they were sent back to Germany. And now, 34 years later, about a dozen former wartime guests returned to Wainwright, and others in their group were prisoners at Seabee in southern Alberta. Little is left of wartime Camp Wainwright. But the sergeant's mess is one building the men remember. And they remember it and their stay at Wainwright not with the bitterness you might expect, but with a kind of nostalgic fondness.
It's quite a good feeling, because we have everything forgotten, which was a grief to us by that time. But now it's all over, and we just come here to see the places and to see all the sites we spent 4 to 5 years of our life.
Well, it's very nostalgic, you know. Actually, we had not too bad a time here, really, and we have been treated very well in this country. And now coming back here, well, it's a good feeling.
I understand while you were here you lost a bit of weight. Never mind, at that time we could take it. I went down from 200 to 135 pounds, and that was the reason why I got a special ration every day, one egg and half a liter of good Canadian milk.
No bitterness at all. It's a period of our life I wouldn't like to miss.
A former watchtower at the prison camp is now an air traffic control tower. And these former enemies are now allies. Their country, West Germany, and Canada are both members of NATO. And after 34 years, wounds heal.
As one man put it, we were unlucky to be prisoners of war. We were lucky to be in Canadian hands.
In 1946, the camp would be reverted to a Canadian Army training facility. It would see rapid expansion during the Korean War, with buildings constructed to house and train three Army battalions on the grounds. Today, CFB Wainwright houses 1,000 personnel at any given time and serves as the main training base of the 1st Canadian Mechanized Brigade Group, which includes the famous Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry. The facility covers 609 square kilometers and has 25 weapons ranges, as well as an airfield. I'd like to take a break away from the episode for a second to talk about ExploreNet. I spent most of my life living in rural areas in Canada, and I remember the days of dial-up internet and spotty high-speed service. For the past 3 years, I have been a customer of ExploreNet, and I can honestly say that it is the best rural internet I have ever had. My job as a podcaster means I spend a lot of time researching online, interviewing people over Zoom, and uploading content. Through it all, ExploreNet has provided me with excellent service. When I'm not working, I enjoy streaming content on several streaming platforms, and even doing some online gaming with a friend in Ontario. ExploreNet allows me to do all of that with ease. Right now, they offer up to 50 megabits per second on their new LTE network with unlimited data. Their service has only become faster and better since I first signed on. Today and beyond, ExploreNet is investing in building and upgrading the network at a rapid pace. ExploreNet is rural, and that is their route, and that is their focus. For more information about rural internet options in your area, go to ExploreNet.com or call 1-866-285-2253. The Wainwright Museum. The original train station that brought so many people to Wainwright, including those aforementioned prisoners of war, still exists in the town. Today it houses the Wainwright Museum, which features photos, movies, many of the artifacts relate to the Second World War, the internment camp, and the bison that once roamed the area. The museum also features a reconstructed post office as it originally was in 1900. For the first decade it existed, the Alberta Government Telephone Building was its home. until the building became too crowded to hold all the artifacts. In 1983, the museum was provided with the basement of the RCMP building rent-free for 2 years. And that same year, the Battle River Historical Society was incorporated, which the museum would fall under the banner of. Here's Mayor Brian Bethune.
Yeah, the Wainwright Museum is like most museums. It's right at the end of Main Street. It's an old along the railway, and it's an old railway building. And if you go in the museum, it's also our visitor information center. So you're going to see a great history of Wainwright. You're going to be able to see all about the Wainwright train trestle, which is just Fabian train trestle, which is about 7 miles away. You're going to be able to see all about the history of the buffalo in Wainwright. You're going to be able to see the history of the oil and gas. You're going to be able to see the history of the military base. But it really focuses a lot on the buffalo itself and the history and how that came along. So it's a nice little museum for a small town, and it takes a while to go through, but you're going to come out of there and say, wow, I didn't realize that.
Wainwright Downtown. The Wainwright Downtown area has many places that have been registered as either municipal or provincial historic resources. I'm going to go through some of the buildings still found downtown and the history behind those structures. Throughout my relation of the history of some of the buildings in the downtown, you will hear me mention a fire that happened in 1929. Needless to say, it was a big one that would alter Wainwright forever. The Wainwright Hotel was built in 1929 to replace a hotel that had burned down, along with much of the downtown core of Wainwright that same year. Prior to the fire, the previous hotel had been built with a wood frame, while this new hotel would be built using concrete to protect it from fire. In the early 1920s, thanks to the thousands of bison kept at the nearby park, several Hollywood Western movies were filmed in and around Wainwright. To accommodate the crew and actors, this new hotel was built with 60 rooms, a restaurant, and a beer parlor. The hotel was made a provincial historic resource on January 30, 2009, and while the original hotel burned to the ground, Heritage Park in Calgary would build a complete replica of the building in 1968, based on photographs. The Union Bank of Canada building was built in 1929, like the Wainwright Hotel, after the July 21st fire that destroyed the business section of the town. The 1929 Wainwright Fire, often called the Great Fire of 1929, was one of the worst fires to hit an Alberta town. Interestingly, most of the downtown core was rebuilt after the disaster, and today, of the 51 buildings in the downtown of Wainwright, 28 are heritage buildings that date from when this disaster happened. The Washburn Building was built in 1929 after the Great Fire. Built of brick, it has a strong association with the Washburn family of Wainwright, who arrived in the community in 1908 on one of the first passenger trains in the community. William Washburn would quickly open a hardware store, which was destroyed in the 1929 fire, and a new building, the one still standing, was built. The Carcel Building was built in, you guessed it, 1929 after the fire that would alter Wainwright forever. This building was used by William Carcel, a noted Alberta photographer, while he lived in Wainwright. His studio was in this building, and he would take many photos of the area that give a glimpse into the lives of Albertans during the interwar years. The Watson Mackenzie House is one of the oldest homes in the entire community, built in 1910 by Dr. W.A. Watson, who came to the community with his family from Chicago in 1908. The home was built by E.C. Buckley, who built many of the important buildings in the early years of the community. Watson would stay in the community until 1914 when he left to serve in the First World War. His mother would live there until 1931 when it was sold to the Sisters of St. Joseph to serve as a boarding house. The Old Town Hall was built in 1929 after the fire, and the building housed the council chambers, municipal offices, jail cell, police department, and fire station. The cultural value of the building is that it's found in its association with the prominent members of the community. When the town hall was being rebuilt, M. L. Forster was the mayor. He served as the owner of the Wainwright Hotel as well, and his daughter was the first baby born in Wainwright and was named Wainwright in honor of that momentous event. Now, before I move on, I want to look at the fire that altered the core of Wainwright. In the July 24, 1929 edition of the Wainwright Star, it is stated that a fire in the Atlas Lumberyard had started from sparks at a private woodshed next to the property. High winds resulted in the burning lumber sending sparks around town from the southwest to the northeast, even destroying the fire equipment because of the intensity of the blaze. The high winds made it nearly impossible to fight the fire, and it would be over 6 hours before it was out. Thankfully, there were no deaths from the fire and no injuries. Town council met with merchants in the Masonic Hall to begin looking at ways to house and feed the families and persons who had suffered great loss from the fire. In addition, a special squad of police were sworn in to patrol the burned area to protect anything that might remain there. It is estimated that the fire caused $1.2 million in damages, or $17.9 million today. Food supplies were also down because of the fire, and conservation measures were initiated to conserve food. Thankfully, it did not take long for bread and other supplies to come in from Edmonton. Here's Mayor Brian Bethune.
Yeah, the historic downtown was, I think it was about year 2000, the government came out with some grant money through the historical societies and Alberta Heritage, and we took advantage of that, and we decided to make some buildings historical. So if you were going to do any renovations to them, then you would have to follow the guidelines and keep some originality to it. Mm-hmm. So what happened is a lot of guys played into that, and they could get grant money to help them convert their storefronts back to more of an original how they were in the 1900s. So what became of that is we got all our Unistone sidewalks, and we have kind of historical looking lamp posts and a lot of storefronts that they're modern, but yet they're historical. And that went off very good. And a lot of credit to that goes to the previous mayor, but we won't tell him that.
Oil and gas. Very early in the history of Alberta, Wainwright was one of the first places to see success in the oil and gas industry. While Leduc No. 1 wouldn't be discovered until the late 1940s, kickstarting the huge oil and gas industry of Alberta, and I did an episode on that, and I encourage you to check it out, it was back in 1921 that the oil and gas was discovered in Wainwright's area, with the first significant production of 6,000 barrels a year coming in 1926. The first find of oil and gas in the area actually dated to early 1914, making it one of the first places in the province to have oil and gas as a viable resource. The history of the oil and gas industry in the community is seen through Petroleum Park, which has one of the first pump jacks ever built in Alberta, the first of many to come over the years. The pump jack was actually made a municipal historic resource in 2008 because of its heritage and cultural value to the community. Unlike other pump jacks in the province that are made of metal, this one is very unique in the fact that it is made of wood. But by 2009, the wood was worn heavily from the exposure to the elements, so the wood was replaced by a heritage consultant that year who took the resource apart and reassembled it. Here's Mayor Brian Bethune.
Yeah, oil and gas has been around since the 1920s for sure, when they discovered oil and gas in our area. And it's one of those things that employs a lot of people, not this year, but normally employs a lot of people. We're a well-established oil and gas field here. There's not a lot of new drills and stuff going on, and there's not a lot of huge oil plays going on. So it's kind of established, so it's more maintenance. So we're a little more secure than some areas such as Lloydminster and bigger areas that are doing a lot of new stuff. Our oil and gas is fairly stable, and it just pumps and pumps. And of course, you need people to maintain it and look after it. So we're not as bad off as some people when the economy goes crazy, but it's definitely a huge boost to our economy. Like I was saying, we're kind of like a three-legged stool. We have the army base, which is huge. We have agriculture, which is huge. We have oil and gas, which is huge. And if any leg is having a bad year and falls off, we can balance on two legs, but we're a lot better off with three.
Famous residents. The community also has several famous individuals who were born or grew up in the community. Frank C. Turner was born in Wainwright on June 2, 1951, and would begin acting in theaters across Canada before moving to Vancouver in 1983 and beginning to act in films. He has appeared in dozens of films since then, most recently as Crazy Carl in the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. Other movies he has appeared in include Unforgiven, Needful Things, Air Bud, 3,000 Miles to Graceland, Scary Movie 3, and Warcraft. He has also appeared in several television shows, including 2 episodes of Highlander, 2 episodes of The X-Files, 2 episodes of Smallville, and also in Supernatural. Lynn Seymour was born in Wainwright on March 8, 1939, and would study ballet in Vancouver. In 1957, she would join the Royal Ballet as a soloist dancer and become the principal dancer in 1959. She would achieve international fame as the leading dance actress of her generation in 1965 when she performed in the title role of Romeo and Juliet and has since gone on to perform with many ballet companies before returning to the Royal Ballet from 1971 to 1978. Today, the Lynn Seymour Award for Expressive Dance is annually presented at the Royal Ballet School, and in 1976, she was invested in the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire. Glenn Sather was born in High River, Alberta, but grew up in Wainwright. After spending time with the Edmonton Oil Kings, he would go on to play 10 seasons in the NHL with the Boston Bruins, Pittsburgh Penguins, New York Rangers, St. Louis Blues, Montreal Canadiens, and Minnesota North Stars. He then joined the Edmonton Oilers of the WHA. In 1979, he would become the president, general manager, and coach of the Edmonton Oilers after they joined the NHL. During the 1980s, he would help guide the Oilers to 4 Stanley Cup championships and would win the Jack Adams Trophy as the top coach in the NHL in 1985-86. From 1976-77 to 1993-94, he would coach 842 games, winning 464, leading to 13 playoff appearances for the team. In 1997, he was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, and on December 11, 2015, a banner with his name on it was lifted to the rafters of Rexall Place. Here's Mayor Brian Bethune.
Wainwright is, of course, the best place to live, work, play, raise a family in Canada, probably. We're a town of 6,300, and that's just a nice size that everybody knows everybody, and you can let your kids go out and play and not have to worry about them. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate in Wainwright because we have the military base right on our border of our town. We have farming and we have oil and gas. So when something is weak, the other one's strong, and it keeps the economy going. I'll be honest, the military people that we talk to here, a lot of them have said they, when they heard they were coming to Wainwright, they absolutely did not like it. And then once they got here, they ended up retiring here. So that's a real feather in our cap. We actually have British colonels from the British Army that have retired here after being here training. I think if you're going across country, you'd want to stop here for a few days. Of course, it's the right size community that everybody's friendly. And if you have a problem, they'll run out and help you. We've had people going through that had a flat tire and people offered them their cars. And we're just that right size of town for friendliness. We've got great campgrounds and campsites in town and in the surrounding community. We've got great golf courses right in town. There's a golf course that's second to none, plus the surrounding villages have super golf courses. So golfing is right up there. We're an excellent hunting area if you're going through town and you want to hunt. We have an arts festival that people that has grown to something very special in the community. So I guess the short answer is, you know, you really just need a visit and you probably want to stay.
I hope you enjoyed that look at the community of Wainwright. And if you did, please leave a rating and review. You can reach me at craig@canadaehx.com. You can visit my website where there's all of my podcast episodes, as well as hundreds of articles on Canada's history. Go to canadaehx.com. Thanks, and we'll see you again next time.